This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
It is perhaps the bulliest of bully pulpits. President Obama is going to make a speech from the Oval Office tomorrow night, all part of slowly tightening the screws on BP. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Elance, where businesses can connect with programmers, designers, marketers, and other independent professionals to get jobs done. You can build a team online at elance.com. And by the Batten Institute, advancing knowledge about entrepreneurship and innovation at the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business, www.batteninstitute.org.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. Good to have you with us on this Monday. It is the 14th of June today. 9%, that's how much BP shares gave up on Wall Street today. Almost 10, if you really want to know. And this is a big week for the oil company. We're expecting to learn what BP's decided to do about its dividend, a matter of no small interest to those shareholders who've seen almost 60% of their investments disappear. CEO Tony Hayward is going to be the special guest of a congressional committee later this week. He will also meet with President Obama at the White House tomorrow before the president's speech. And it's no secret what the president's going to say, either in that meeting or in the speech. He wants the leak stopped, and he wants victims of the oil leak, not BP shareholders, to get paid first. In fact, he wants to make sure those victims get paid, period. Marketplace's Rob Schmitz reports.
BP CEO Tony Hayward says his company will pay all legitimate claims for the Gulf spill. But will he do it? That's what Louisiana Treasurer John Kennedy wants to know.
Show me the money. I want to see it. I want to know that the money will be there. I'm glad BP is the fourth largest company in the world. I'm glad they have $81 billion in assets. I appreciate their commitment to pay us in full. Show me the money. Put it into escrow.
Last week, Louisiana and Florida demanded BP set aside $7.5 billion into an escrow account to pay for the mounting damage to their economies. Now the Obama administration wants to take over, demanding BP finance a fund managed by a third party to pay victims of the spill. The president could ask for direct government control of the fund, but energy industry analyst Kevin Book says that wouldn't look good to our British friends, many of whom are BP shareholders.
One country's solution is another country's problem right now. And the last thing you want is the perception that the U.S. federal government has reached into the coffers of a British company.
A British company, says Book, that also contributes jobs and capital to the U.S. economy. The amount BP pays, says Book, has to be big enough to reassure American voters, but modest enough to ensure BP doesn't go bankrupt in the process. Last week, a group of Democratic senators asked for a $20 billion fund. That's around twice the amount of cash BP currently has on hand. I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
The oil and natural gas still spewing from the floor of the Gulf of Mexico has put energy and climate change bills onto the legislative front burner. Congress is scrambling to come up with ways to strengthen government oversight of the oil industry, and higher liability caps and stiffer drilling safety rules are almost a given in this election year. Longer-term solutions, though? Here's John Dimsdale from Washington.
Those who labor to wean the country from fossil fuels say the Gulf oil gusher has given their cause an opportunity.
I think it's been a crystallizing moment in terms of demonstrating to both Congress and the American people the urgency of changing both our energy supplies and our energy policies.
David Foster is with the Blue-Green Alliance of Unions and Environmental Groups. He says the explosion of BP's oil rig and the oil spill
is a wake-up call that we need a national seminar on how we convert to a clean energy economy.
Environmentalists see plenty of momentum now behind legislation that would raise the price of burning carbon, cap greenhouse gas pollution, and create incentives for alternative fuels. But Frank Misano, an energy analyst with Bracewell and Giuliani, sees just the opposite.
The oil spill actually hurts them in their cause there, because offshore drilling would have been a vote-getter for many of these moderate Democrats and even Republicans. And of course, now that vote-getter of offshore drilling is basically off the table.
Misano says the only way any Republicans or even Democrats from states that rely on the fossil fuel economy would vote for the extra cost of energy conversion would be with new leases for offshore drilling and with government support for other industries like coal and nuclear. He expects the congressional stalemate over the nation's energy future and when and how to shift from fossil fuels to continue. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Off oil now, onto something else, healthcare reform. Most of it doesn't really kick in until 2014, but businesses are worried now that it's going to hit them hard in the pocketbooks. And that's part of why the White House released new rules today that are aimed at keeping employers from raising premiums or scaling back care in advance. Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
One of the goals of reform was to let people keep the health coverage they have. The new rules give businesses an incentive to make that happen. The government exempts them from costly upgrades, like paying the full cost for preventive care starting this September, so long as they keep the status quo. Companies that change any part of their coverage could lose their exemptions. Michelle Dimmerob with the National Federation of Independent Business says the regulations are too strict.
That if you like what you've got and you're a small business owner, you better get ready to say goodbye to it. Any variation you're going to be making to your plan is nearly likely to throw you out of the ability to keep it.
For example, companies that increase copays by a certain amount won't have their exemptions grandfathered in. Larry Levitt with the Kaiser Family Foundation says the administration tried to strike a balance.
I mean, they could have taken a very hard line and said any changes in a plan means it loses its grandfathered status.
If the regulations hold, some small businesses could drop workplace insurance altogether. Dr. Bill Roper is dean of the medical school at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. He hopes that doesn't happen.
I hope they take the long view and do responsible things that are beneficial to our employer-based health insurance system in America.
The government will take comments on the new regs for the next 60 days. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, no. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The annual video game extravaganza known as E3 starts tomorrow here in Los Angeles, and we were there last year, and I'll tell you what, it's a little overwhelming. Huge crowds, unbelievable noise, quite the sensory overload. But there is a new game this year that's cutting through the buzz. Red Dead Redemption, it's called. It's set out in the wild, wild west. Has just about everything you've ever seen in a movie western crammed into it. Dozens of characters, intricate plots, detailed dialogue, lots of action. A review in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago called it a tour de force. That is what you hear about an actual movie with, I don't know, Meryl Streep in it, maybe? Not usually the kind of language you hear where games are concerned. So we've invited Justin Calvert in to chat. He's a senior editor at GameSpot. Justin, good to have you with us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I want to compare experiences. You have played this game, right? I have only watched the trailer. But it does seem to me that this is, I guess the word is more emotional than something like Grand Theft Auto, which is the most recent Rockstar production. Is that your sense after playing this thing?
Yeah, I would say so. In raw gameplay terms, it's very similar. The two games have a lot in common. But in terms of the story and the protagonist and everything, he's a much more sympathetic guy. And he's a lot easier to just kind of relate to.
Why? I mean, aren't these games all about shoot 'em up, or is that just my misunderstanding?
Even in GTA 4, I mean, he was a somewhat reluctant troublemaker, if you like. The guy in Red Dead Redemption, a guy called John Marston, you learn very early on that he's had like a real troubled past and he used to run with gangs and that kind of thing. But really, he just wants to settle down and be a family man. And it's actually the government that won't let him do that because they're using him to get back at his former gangmates.
Tugging at the heartstrings, one has to imagine, to increase sales, though.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the reviews for this game have all been insanely positive, yeah. And a big part of that is just the fact that the story's so great and that he is a really great character to play as, you know, because it, at times you feel like that kind of man with no name, Clint Eastwood, and you're free to do whatever you want.
Cue the good, bad, and the ugly music right here, right? Yeah, but, I mean, is this the new thing in video games? We had the single-person shooter, and we had the rough and tumble of Grand Theft Auto, and now it's video games that make you want to cry?
I think story is definitely a much more important part of games now, and I think one of the things that kind of illustrates that is just the fact that games have gotten a lot easier nowadays. So
really, you mean just the button pushing and figuring out?
Yeah,
how to shoot and
just
all that
getting
stuff?
From start to finish now is not so much a test. I mean, they still have like maybe a hard mode or something for guys who really want to push themselves, but really, when the people make these games, they're not trying to just challenge you. They want you to experience the story that they've lovingly created. So they don't want you to get stuck halfway through and not see it through.
Did you make, you made it all the way through?
I did, yeah. It took me about 35 hours.
So is it spoiling things? 35 hours.
Yeah.
And let's just bear in mind, you get paid for this. This is your job. You're sitting ahead. Would it spoil things if you told people how it ended?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'd be killed. but you experience some real highs and lows with the character. That's as much as I really say.
Emotion comes to video games. Justin Calvert, yeah. Senior editor at GameSpot. Justin, thanks a lot for coming in.
Yeah, no problem.
The U.S. Conference of Mayors meets today in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. They spent part of their morning, though, talking about Arizona. The mayors went on the record against Arizona's new immigration law, the one that's set to go into effect at the end of the month, end of next month, rather. It's the one that makes it a crime to be in that state without the right kind of papers. The mayors also want Washington to get its act together on federal immigration reform so that state laws aren't necessary anymore. But Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports some illegal immigrants in Arizona aren't waiting around.
All over Phoenix, you'll find yard sales like this one. Sylvia Arias sells the possessions of four Hispanic families. They're undocumented, so they're moving someplace else.
Some are returning to Mexico, some are moving to Albuquerque.
The new law requiring police to verify the legal status of immigrants has created a climate of fear.
Everyone is migrating to other states to see if we can find a better life for our children.
Leticia Munoz also wants a better life for her kids. She's been in the U.S. for 10 years. Now she's planning to move her family back to Mexico.
There really are no jobs there. I don't want to go back. I have three children, but these new laws really scare me.
She used to earn around $400 a month babysitting the children of other immigrants. But over the last year and a half, Arizona has cracked down on businesses that employ undocumented workers. Many immigrants have lost their jobs, and they no longer need a babysitter. Leticia is down to making $90 a month, not enough to live on. When she leaves, she'll pull her 8-year-old daughter out of school. It's a pattern that's creating chaos for the school district.
In the last 5 weeks, we're down about almost 100 students.
That's Jeffrey Smith, superintendent of the Balls Elementary School District. He says the state reimburses the district about $5,000 per child.
The 100 students that we've lost translate into, I believe, $500,000.
The school year ended last Friday. During the summer break, more students are expected to leave town. If the district loses too much funding, it could be forced to cut teachers. Smith's also concerned about how the exodus will impact surrounding neighborhoods.
It can blight a community. So you have apartments that are less and less full, businesses closed down, and so we're very concerned about what effect this will have on the economy in this area.
But isn't the economic impact offset by the money taxpayers will save on social services? Probably not. Judy Gans studies the economics of immigration at the University of Arizona. She says the state doesn't have a surplus of young, low-skilled workers. So if Arizona kicks out all the illegal immigrants and replaces them with Americans from other states, taxpayers will still have to subsidize the low-skilled workers.
Any low-skilled worker generally is going to pay less in taxes than they consume in social services.
Before the recession, Gans says immigrant labor helped fuel growth in construction, manufacturing, and the hotel industry.
One needs to be really careful about, you know, sort of thinking we can parse this and get rid of certain categories of workers without hurting the whole industry.
The music is still upbeat at this strip mall in an immigrant neighborhood, but businesses here are suffering because so many Hispanics have left town. Francisco Noriega works at a jewelry store.
People are afraid to go out now, you know what I mean? They don't want to spend money in case of an emergency.
Do you have any sense of how much business has gone down, like percentage-wise?
About 80, 70%.
Noriega is a U.S. citizen. The departure of his customers, many of whom are undocumented, could cost him his job.
It's affecting every single one of us, really a lot.
And it's expected to get worse for local businesses next month. During a recent coffee talk at an elementary school, a group of 40 undocumented parents were asked, "How many of you will leave town if the law goes into effect at the end of July?" They all raised their hands. In Phoenix, I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Coming up, Devo and the business of music.
The functions of labels are almost gone. People have devalued music in terms of its cultural importance, and they feel they shouldn't even have to pay for it.
But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials lost 20 points this Monday. That's about 0.2%, settled at 10,190. The NASDAQ stayed above water, but just barely, by the tiniest fraction of 1%. Closed basically flat, 2243. The S&P 500 dropped nearly 2 points, almost 0.2%, wrapped up at 1,089. Financials were especially hard hit. Shares of Morgan Stanley dumped more than 2.5%. J.P. Morgan Chase dropped an even 2%. Goldman Sachs shed nearly 1.75%. On the brighter side, shares of Starbucks perked up a little more than 1% after the coffee retailer said it planned to offer free Wi-Fi at stores to help bring in more customers. Bonds fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 3.26%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Vanguard, a client-owned company where the clients own the funds and the funds own the company. Learn more at Vanguard.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet. Every day, be sure to wake up to the Marketplace Morning Report. It's 8 minutes of radio you can't afford to miss. You'll hear updates on all the latest developments in business and finance as they happen.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up Tuesday. The National Association of Home Builders releases its monthly report on builder confidence in the single-family housing market. A House Committee on Energy and Environment hears from the top executives of the five largest oil companies. Among the topics, offshore oil drilling. And shall we play a game? Thousands are expected in Los Angeles for the Electronic Entertainment Expo. E3 officially kicks off tomorrow. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. There is a certain cold calculation at work in the American labor market. Applicants either get the job they're going for or they don't. Companies are either hiring or they're not. States and cities attract new businesses and jobs or they don't. Somebody wins, somebody loses. After 2+ years of a down economy, those states and cities are looking for any edge they can get, which is why one Silicon Valley startup chose Michigan over Texas, as Jay Field reports.
Global Watt is betting on a bright future.
Hey, Chris, where are you? I need you to get all these lights on the factory floor, so thanks.
Sanjeev Chitri, Global Watt's CEO, flips a few more switches, and finally, some lights come on. The 74,000-square-foot plant is completely empty, stunning in its silence. The solar panel maker leased a plant in Saginaw, and its officials are figuring out how things work there, literally.
You come here 6 months from now, you will not recognize this place.
In a few weeks, says Chitri, the first shipments of heavy machinery will hit this factory floor so GlobalWatt can produce up to 1 million solar panels a year. This facility used to churn out engine blocks for cars. Lots of auto jobs are gone, but Chitri says his company will be hiring some 500 people for the new operation. Good news for Saginaw, where the unemployment rate hovers around 13%. Bad news for Corpus Christi, Texas.
We very much wanted GlobalWatt to be part of the Corpus Christi corporate landscape.
And for more than a year, J.J. Johnston, a Corpus Christi economic development official, courted the company. The city has a port and offered the solar panel maker nearly $3 million in tax incentives. But it was taking a long time to negotiate the deal. So on a trip to New York to work out final details, Sanjeev Chitri's lawyer suggested he meet Kathy Muzio.
The company had not thought of Michigan at all.
Muzio's firm, Atlas Insight, advises companies on where to set up shop. A few years back, a colleague told her the Saginaw area was trying to set up a mini solar valley. They already had Hemlock Semiconductor, a chipmaker.
And I thought, you know, hey, this could work. I mean, because they're creating this great cluster. But more importantly, you know, the unemployment rate was high, and that's not a negative.
Muzio consulted with Saginaw officials and hustled a proposal to GlobalWatt. Company officials flew to Saginaw on a Friday, where Joanne Creary, who drums up business for Saginaw, was waiting.
We amassed a group of 20 people, from executives from Dow Corning and Hemlock Semiconductor to the president of the community college to someone from our utility. Anyone that could answer questions that company had were there on a Sunday evening. The governor called in from Japan.
The full court press worked. Tens of millions of dollars of promised tax incentives and an empty 74,000-square-foot factory helped. GlobalWatt has gotten roughly 300 job applications so far. It'll have one assembly line up and running later in the year. In Saginaw, Michigan, I'm Jay Field for Marketplace.
You know how sometimes when you hear a song, it just takes you right back in time?
I say whip it! Whip it good!
Devo hit the pop charts with Whip It in 1980. The band had actually been around since the early 1970s, though. They were kind of anti-establishment. Devo, in fact, is short for de-evolution, as in the de-evolution of society. The guys all dressed the same. They made some pretty interesting music, and then they stopped. Now, though, they have started again. Devo's first album in a long time comes out tomorrow. So today, in our continuing series, The Art of Money, What Artists and Others See When They Look at the Economy, Devo founder Gerald Casale, and what got the band back into the studio after 20 years.
The world is on a disaster course. De-evolution's real. Devo is becoming senior citizens, and we had to do it while we could.
Remind me of this de-evolution notion that you guys had.
Well, it wasn't a big idea. It was just a set of anecdotal observations about how things were going as compared to the propaganda we all received as products of the 60s about endless progress, evolution, technology solving problems. But that isn't what Devo saw. We were looking at people seemingly getting dumber. And when I say that, what I mean is less able to think critically, to analyze information, and started becoming more and more herd-like mentality of just repeating sound bites.
So here's where I do the, hey, wait a minute thing, because you guys now on this album have sort of gone that way. You're using focus groups. You're letting the audience pick the tracks that are going to be on the actual CD. I mean, you're buying into it. A clever marketing ploy, probably, but I mean, you are doing it.
Well, it's partly satirical, but it's also having your cake and eating it, too, because we decided what's the one thing Devo never did, which was play ball. We don't exclude ourselves from the de-evolution process.
Is there a song on this new album that exemplifies that?
I would say What We Do.
What we do. You know, it's great because I can remember in like the late 70s watching you guys on Saturday Night Live and saying, who are these guys? What are they all about? And now you've kind of come full circle.
Right. We were shocking then, and what we were proposing seemed ludicrous and made some people really angry, and now it's the opposite. We're not shocking at all. I've said that we're like the house band on the Titanic.
You look a little bit wistful, a little bit regretful, just sitting here in the studio.
That's what happens with age.
There is, I think, on this album, you know, what I've heard of it. I mean, you guys acknowledge much more the business of music, I think, than you ever did. That you know, I mean, you got to make a buck.
That is definitely the culture we all live in. I mean, look what's happened. The implosion of the music business in general. The functions of labels are almost gone. People have devalued music in terms of its cultural importance, and they feel they shouldn't even have to pay for it. And with all the home recording techniques, everybody puts out CDs, and everybody thinks they can become the next huge act by using social networking like Facebook or MySpace. And it's all largely an illusion. What's happened is that so many CDs are put out per month, possibly like 10,000 a month. Nobody can possibly even know half the music that exists out there. And so marketing is everything. Marketing is the end-all, be-all of our society.
There's a song on this album. It's called Watch Us Work It that was commissioned by Dell. Let's play it, and then I want to ask you a question. Did I read someplace you actually prefer your music to be commissioned? I mean, that's the way you like to do it?
Well, at this point, what's happened is artists no longer make a living by selling music. They only make a living by tour grosses, merchandising receipts, and having their songs licensed to commercials, video games, or films. That's it. Trying to make a living as a recording artist, that's the only way you're going to survive.
Is it fair to say that this album's a little bit cynical?
We've always been accused of being cynical. I think anybody that, you know, honestly analyzes the problems of human nature and society is called cynical. Yeah, we've never been the high hope and put a bow on it band.
Gerald Casale from the band Devo. Their new album is called Something for Everybody.
Newspaper are saying that the European Union is thinking about taking away Spain, and we are afraid because we...
This final note today from our every now and then weekly rap guest, Mike Mandel. He wrote an intriguing blog post the other day about the most significant economic event of the past decade. I'll take a second here, let you guess quietly to yourselves. No, it wasn't the dot-com boom and bust, not housing, not the financial crisis or the recession. Try this one. The failure of the Human Genome Project to, so far, deliver medically useful results. You think about how much we spend on healthcare every year. The logic's pretty good. The link is on our website. You can check the News in Brief column. It's, of course, at marketplace.org. And that, in fact, is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow lost 20 points, 0.2%. The Nasdaq closed basically flat, picked up at just a fraction of a point. And the S&P 500 dropped nearly 2 points, almost 0.2%. Our producers include Caitlin Carroll, Millie Jefferson, Megan Larson, and Fiona Ng. Tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report for the latest in business and economic news. Coming up next time on this broadcast, back to the European debt crisis via Madrid.
Newspapers are saying that the European Union is thinking about taking away Spain, and we are afraid because without the euro, Spain is nothing.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Do hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money.
Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.